Hello and welcome to Baylor Connections, a conversation series with the people shaping our future. Each week we go in-depth with Baylor leaders, professors, and more discussing important topics in higher education, research, and student life. I'm Derek Smith, and our guest today is Dr. Jason Witt. Dr. Witt is a senior lecturer in the Honors Program in Baylor's Honors College. He joined the Honors Program full-time after a long tenure as Associate Director of Baylor's Institute for Faith and Learning. He serves as co-director of Baylor's William Carey Crane Scholars Program and, as of this January, is the faculty in residence for Memorial and Alexander Halls, living along and leading an intentional community comprised of 323 Honors College students. And he's with us today on Baylor Connections. Jason, welcome to the program. It's great to have you here.
Thank you, Derek. I'm happy to be here.
So 323 students. You moved on campus in January. Now, your wife, Maggie, you have two kids, Henry and Camille. How much has your life changed for you all since that move in January?
It has changed a lot. We are adjusting still to living with a bunch of 18 to 22-year-olds, but they have welcomed us and loved us. They could not have been kinder in receiving our family. My son has people to play basketball with him at his beck and call. He has people that come do homework with him and play with him all the time. We have dog walkers more than we can handle, which is great because we have two little dogs who are used to being out in the backyard that they don't have anymore.
So they've got friends. The kids have friends.
We have great students around us to talk to and get to know and share life with.
Well, that's great. So Memorial and Alexander's Halls, represented by college students from Baylor's Honors College. Let's talk about that role a little bit. What does the role of faculty in residence look like? And then we'll talk more specifically about that role at those halls.
The idea of faculty residence is drawing the academic life back into student and residential life, drawing students into community and friendships with faculty who are in their residence halls with them so we can do academic programming, hosting of events, welcoming students into your home, but a chance to help students remember the connection between faculty, the faculty who are teaching them in the classrooms are also people who live lives and have families, and let them draw into community together. And so with Honors Residential College, we have 323 students who were very driven, very excited about the things they're studying, very intentional about asking questions of who they are, how their work they're doing here is both a calling and a way in which they might go serve the larger world, how it's shaping their Christian faith, how their faith draws them into community and friendship with other people who might be different than them. And so the role of the faculty in residence is to help them find ways to have conversations, interactions, draw what they're learning in the classroom into their life in residence halls and sort of life together as students. And so that could look like intentional programming of events and speakers or dinner conversations. It could also look like just casual conversations. It could be play. It could be fun events like humans versus zombies or, watching games together. And all those things allow us to build a community of students and faculty and let them begin to think, who am I? Who am I called to be in all this?
Mm-hmm. What does that look like in practice? I imagine there's a lot of brainstorming. You're always thinking and a lot of conversations with students.
There is. We have an incredible leadership team. I get to work with really outstanding people. We have a residence hall director who works with all our CLs and does a lot of the planning with them and deals with a lot of the student life, daily life issues. Alex Christ, he's outstanding. Courtney DePalma, who's our program coordinator, she's been doing this for 9 years in the HRC. She's invaluable. I couldn't function without her. She keeps me from messing up too much. But she's helping doing all the planning, the big events, the leadership formation, making sure everything happens that needs to happen. Then we have four graduate assistants who work with us. We have two chaplains who live in residence with us who are dealing with the spiritual needs. Then we have 50-plus students who are on our leadership team. And so all of us work together to vision, to think about what sort of social events do we have? What kind of academic events do we have? Where does our spiritual life get formed and how do we form it? And then just all the other things that happen. All these students are work and invest themselves in it. So it is definitely a work of an entire team. And that doesn't even count all our students who are not officially on leadership, who are still giving of themselves, who are walking down the hall to open doors, make connections, visit with students. Because we are a residential college, Baylor has three of those, the Honors Residential College, Teal, and Brooks. Those are two-year commitments for the students, at least a minimum. So we have students all the way up to senior year living with us in our community. And so it's sophomores, juniors, seniors walking down the hall, meeting freshmen, welcoming them, helping them find their place, and whether that's an official role as a leadership or not.
What have you, I know you're only a few weeks in, so you've got a lot that you'll be doing, but what's been your favorite part of it so far, whether it's a specific event or some sort of programming you've planned or something else?
I think my favorite part, and this is probably just me, my nature, my favorite part has been the impromptu meetings that my office is now also 20 feet down the hall from my front door. Mm-hmm. And so I'm sitting in my office and students are walking by and they can walk in, pop their heads in and talk. We said very early on our first meeting with all the students, if you see our family sitting in a memorial dining hall eating, you're welcome to join us. And we eat there a lot. Mm-hmm. And the students have joined us. And so it is great. You're sitting, we might have 5-10 students sitting, sharing a meal with us and just hearing about their lives, talking with them, getting to know them, those sort of happenstance meetings, providential meetings that allow us to get to know the students and have conversations. Or you're right there when you can see something is on a face, something is sort of weighing on a heart. You see that. You can say, hey, let's stop and talk because I'm right there. Mm-hmm. And I've loved that part, that sort of role of getting to connect that way with the students.
What about Jason? Surprises? Anything surprised you so far?
I think the amount of work that our students do, mm-hmm. the amount that goes into living in the HRC, the time. Jonathan Tran, who preceded me, told me it was busy. I don't think I knew what he really meant. Mm-hmm. There is always something going on. And that's a great thing. It keeps the students active. It allows many of them to have hands in things that they want to do because there's much going on because they want it to go on and they've dreamed of stuff and they've worked to put it together. And the surprise is how much there is to do and how much to be at. And there's always something you could be involved in. So I've both loved that, but it's been learning to manage my time a little bit.
Sure. When we talk about student engagement, that plays into that, right? All these different events for different students and their different mm-hmm. interests and goals.
Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of them. So, you know, 4 nights a week and 4 mornings a week, there's worship. There's chapel going on. So that's always happening. There might be fun events going on. There's we might have a watch party. We might have this meeting. There's going to be constant lectures, constant small opportunities for small group discussions. We do a symposium series where we bring in someone to visit. We have a meal for about 18 students, and then just to sit and talk with. And this could be, we had Ross Douthat from the New York Times,
yeah.
last week, just sitting with some students. We'll have others. We'll have big, huge lectures. And so all those are constantly going, as well as just the individual things you're always working on with students.
Visiting with Dr. Jason Witt on Baylor Connections. And as you work with students, obviously, you have great experience with Baylor students throughout the years, whether at IFL or as an adjunct professor. What do Baylor students mean to you and your family? And obviously, I'm thinking of one story in particular.
Right. Yeah. The big kids swing, our engineering students did their senior design project, really over 3 years ended up being, to produce a swing for my daughter Camille. I have a daughter who's severe neurological impairment, profoundly mentally, physically disabled, and one of the senior design projects was to build a swing for her, an automatic swing. And I think what has always struck me about Baylor students, even from my time as an undergraduate, is just the outstanding character. These are young men and women who are exceptional, not only intellectually, but morally and spiritually, and that comes through in all that they do. And those students who built her swing, it wasn't just a project for them. It wasn't just, we've got to do this, we got to build this little girl a swing, and I guess we need to do it because we went on to graduate. They wanted to know about her. They want to know what she liked. They want to know what she was interested in. They wanted her favorite color so they could paint the swing that color. And the three teams that worked on it, you could tell for every one of the students, it was a deep passion to get this right for this little girl that they maybe had only met one time, but they knew it mattered to her. And the joy in those students when they were able to deliver the swing and see Camille in it, They didn't want to leave the event where they present it to her. They just wanted to stay there and watch her and talk with her. When they brought it to our house to actually deliver it and set it up, they didn't want to leave. They wanted to watch her and talk with her and talk with us. And I was moved by the commitment they had to her and the commitment they had to doing something that would matter for someone, to give of their skills and all that they're learning for the good of someone else. Mm-hmm. And that, to me, shows that what we're hoping to accomplish, our very best at Baylor, producing students not just with skills and knowledge, but students formed deeply in the Christian tradition who recognize a calling to this world, who recognize that they are being formed not just to be skilled at something, but with wisdom and a sense that we have a greater work, and we're working for kingdom good that should transform our world or the little place we have in it. Even if it's one little girl, we're going to do it excellently. Mm-hmm. That showed me that they were getting that, and that is the very best of, I think, what Baylor is aiming at.
It's a fantastic story. That was a great day getting to see that at out at the Brick. And again, if anyone would like to know more about that story, it's well worth your time. You can just Google Camille's Big Girl Swing, and you'll find that story through Baylor Magazine or Baylor Proud or some other areas. We're visiting with Dr. Jason Witt today on Baylor Connections, a senior lecturer in the Honors Program and faculty in residence at Memorial and Alexander's Halls. And as you had a role in the IFL for a long time, spent a number of years in Baylor's Institute for Faith and Learning. How did that role impact the way you teach and the way you approach this job?
It's changed everything about how I teach, how I do this job. One of the things I learned there, and I believe still to this day, and I am so grateful for the work of the Institute for Faith and Learning and Darren Davis and his belief in me and what he gave to me, is that Christian mission doesn't happen just because you say you're Christian. By repeating enough doesn't mean you're Christian. Christian mission happens because you're intentional, and it happens in the classroom. It happens not because we say a prayer or read a scripture verse, which can be very good things in the classroom, but it's because we thought intentionally about what it is to teach as a Christian. And so there is Christian pedagogy, that all education is aimed towards some end. Education is aimed towards something. It's not that Baylor is just like UT, but they're neutral. We add this thing called Christian on. There's Richard John Newhouse says there's no such thing as university pure and simple. Mm-hmm. Every university is aimed towards some end. It teaches towards some end. Every teaching is towards some end. And sometimes there is what happens, and the ends we aim at are not necessarily what we think they are. But the students are always learning something. So teaching is not just about information. It will always be moral. It will always be spiritual. All those things will always be taught in the classrooms, even when we don't think we're teaching them. I remember distinctly teaching a class, and it was April, and it was a small class of 15 students, and I realized someone was missing. I had done all the great pedagogical things of horseshoeing the rooms. They looked at each other and talked to them. I remember asking, I said, someone's gone. Who's not here today? And they said, that guy over there. And I thought, we have 15 students, we're in April, and we still think of him as that guy. What have I done wrong? I began to think that my teaching was teaching them something that no one else mattered in the classroom. I didn't believe that. I didn't want to teach that, but that was being conveyed by the very way I taught. And so through our work at IFL on Christian pedagogy, on the new faculty retreat we take every year, and work with people like David Smith and Candace Vogler, how to think about my practices in my classroom that are also teaching, not just the information. It doesn't have to change the information or the content, but the very practice of teaching is also teaching something. So how do I convey things like charity, attention, humility, wisdom, that are all part of the classroom, that don't change the content, but they are being taught.
Well, as you do that, you are employing that in the Medical Humanities program at Baylor. For those who don't know, what is that program?
Medical Humanities program is really unique, almost in the United States, a way of preparing students for medical school that isn't just the typical science track. You have to have the sciences. Those are important. But the Medical Humanities intentionally tries to holistically train students, bring in humanities, bring in literature, art, philosophy, religion, sociology, all broader aspects of pre-medical formation. I always tell students you can become a really skilled physician, but you might not be a good physician. The questions of medicine, of what it is to be healthy, what it is to suffer, do we treat, do we not, what do we do at the beginning of life, all those are questions that are not found by looking farther into a microscope or a petri dish. Those are the questions of our world's religions, of philosophy, of literature, of theology, and to be able to answer those, and those are going to be the fundamental questions of medicine, particularly as technology advances. What do? What do we not do? Medical humanities gives the chance to take the classes and engage the bigger questions to prepare students not just to be skilled, but to be excellent and good physicians.
Now, you've been a pastor, you're an ordained minister, degrees in religion and theology. Would you have ever imagined yourself teaching future doctors? And what did that path to that spot look like?
I did not ever imagine myself teaching future. I've told my dissertation director this. I know I finished as a fairly mediocre political theologian. I was interested in sort of the connection of church and the state, and that was great. My daughter's birth really took me down this path of medicine and disability, beginning to ask questions of what it is to be a person. What have I always assumed? What does this mean now that I encounter her? But my passion is now at this intersection of theology, faith, and the practice of medicine, and particularly how we form physicians, the formation of physicians, not just as skilled, as I said, but actually good people, moral people, virtuous people, and how do they ask the questions and engage the big things that are going to be shaping medicine in the future. And so her birth sort of led me into disability theology, which I didn't know was a field, I didn't know it existed. Baylor became an interesting crossroads for people from around the world who had those interests, who kept passing through here, and I got to meet them, and then discovering how many people here have a similar interest. And then you can't begin to ask questions of particularly profound disability and not begin touching more and more on questions of in medicine, of whether ethics or practice, the formation of physicians, who they are, how they make their determinations.
Wow. So in a lot of ways, your daughter Camille, she doesn't know she's touching a lot of students, but she is.
She is. She is transforming lives in incredible ways. Just sometimes just being around her, honestly, just being around her is enough for most, but she's also given me a clear vision of where I might go.
Well, what are the classes that you teach?
I've taught for the last 5 or 6 years a course on disability and society, which does look at the question of disability. It's particularly a theological anthropology. What is it to be human? Those questions are that intersection of profound intellectual disability in medicine, but also the practical day-to-day. What is it to engage with disability, and how do we understand it? What does it look like in our community? What does that mean for physicians treating it and dealing with it, which most have zero training in disability? Most medical schools don't deal with it. So that's one course I teach. Then I am also teaching this semester for the first time one of the medical humanities required courses, which is Christian spirituality and healthcare. So look at the way in which faith has played an important role in the practice of medicine historically and still does, even if it's not always recognized.
Visiting with Dr. Jason Witt on Baylor Connections. And Jason, as we head into the final few minutes of the program, what does it mean to you what do you appreciate most, I should say, about that intersection of faith and learning, whether it relates to medicine or something else? This has been really your calling in a lot of ways here at Baylor.
Right. And this is really a continuation, whether it's in medicine or working with students or pre-med students. The moral and spiritual formation, intellectual formation, those things go together. And that's been the heart of what we're trying to do at the HRC too. How do we form our students intellectually, spiritually, morally? All those things go hand in hand. What practices, what habits of mind? How do we form a community that thinks about those things and shapes our students towards that end? And I love that with the practice of medicine, because I see students who are wanting to be prepared before they go off. And how can I make sure that happens, or at least begin helping them have some of the resource they have to stay as who they are, believe they're called to be, even as they go through the process of medical formation.
Set that foundation. Visiting with Dr. Jason Witt. And Jason, as we head into the final couple of minutes of the program, there's one other group of students that you work with that I want to ask you about. You've worked with them since your days in the IFL, and that's the Crane Scholars. Who are they, and what do they mean to Baylor?
Crane Scholars is a program that was designed and began really in the late 1990s to form the next generation of Christian scholars. When Baylor began its push to become a top research universe that also maintained its Christian identity. We realized, where do you find people form that way? And where are we going to find leaders to fill the roles and faculty and roles here and elsewhere? So the Crane Scholars were a group formed for students to think about the intersection of their faith, their calling, the intersection of their intellectual life and their spiritual life. And so it's a three-year program. We take about a cohort of anywhere from 15 to 20 students at the beginning of their sophomore year. They stay with us for 3 years. They're going to read about moral formation, big questions of the intersection of faith and reason, faith and science. And they're going to do some theological formation. And then finally, capstone, beginning to look out. How does my life move as I move from Baylor? And so we usually have about 50 to 60 students in the program at a time. I always think of them as Baylor's best and brightest, but they've been a blessing to my family. Many of the Crane Scholars have been our babysitters who sat with Camille. But these are students who are going to go, and they're going to med school, law school. They're going to teach. They're going to be parents. They're going to be people who fill our pews. And they're going to think carefully about the way in which the life of the mind is animated by their faith, and that, whether that's in a particular work setting, whether that's in the way they understand their role in the community, whether their role as parents, scholars, teachers. And they are an incredible group. One of our Crane Scholars is actually on the Board of Regents now.
Wow.
Katie Jo Baumgartner is Langham is a former Crane. But they are all over the country. They're filling out, beginning to go into universities. Just really outstanding young men and women who are very passionate about their faith, about their learning, and the way in which they can see God moving in all that they're doing.
And Jason, as we head in the final moment here now, I want to ask you, you know, we've talked about some really important topics here, faith and learning and spiritual formation. And I got to thank you now as a faculty in residence. Does it keep you on your toes? And I'm sure having kids does so even more so. But now that you're with college students, even the best and the brightest do some funny things, some crazy things sometimes. How do you balance the lofty thinking about these important topics, but also just those goofy moments that happen when you're around 300 college students?
The goofy moments are the best moments.
Yeah.
That's when the good stuff happens. We have good conversations. And I recognize that it doesn't all have to be high and serious, that God has made us for fun and joy, too. Mm-hmm. And so those are great moments to have.
And with 323 students, I'm sure there's plenty of that. Well, Jason, we're out of time now, but thank you so much for your time on the program today. Enjoyed the visit, and look forward to hearing more about what goes on there at Alexander and Memorial and all the work you're doing in the Honors College.
Thank you, Derek.
Dr. Jason Witt, our guest today on Baylor Connections. Dr. Witt is senior lecturer in the Honors Program in Baylor's Honors College and the faculty in residence at Memorial and Alexander Halls. I'm Derek Smith. A reminder, you can hear this and other Baylor Connections programs online, baylor.edu/connections, or you can subscribe on iTunes. Thanks for joining us on Baylor Connections.